No, so breaking news, because the proposal, the new law proposal, literally just came out early this afternoon at 2 o'clock, and she did a press conference. And what it seems is that the outcome, what I quickly saw from it, and I read some analyst evaluations, so I'll first ask Pierre-Yves for his comments there, is it seems that it's very good for European companies. The downside for us, this conference, people loving open source, is that it looks at this point that the open source first element is not in there. We were really hoping for that. We lobbied hard for that, but that element is not in it. But what's in it is that European companies will have a privilege. And that's interesting because we one of the comments from the people in the audience today on my talk earlier about... Should we give a privilege to a European company that has proprietary software compared to a non-EU company that is providing open source software? It seems that the European Commission now made a choice in the direction of going for European. What is your first comment on that, Pierre?
My first comment is that when it comes to public money, we should promote to opt for public code by default. It's me who funds. It's me. It's you. It's everybody who funds the projects that are the purchases on the projects of the Commission and of the public sector. So I think I want the code I pay for. So that's my first reaction. But also, you say it's a good news because they take open source into account. I think I'm not sure they like it, but I think they are forced to put open source in the roadmap. So it's good. It means that our efforts pay and it can be considered a kind of success. But it is also currently a kind of political buzzword that they can't avoid. So that's good news. We have to surf on this wave, but there is still a lot of way to go ahead. And I also believe, and it has always been the case, but I also believe that open source starts from the ground, that it is up to us to deploy open source everywhere, at home, in our companies, universities, organizations, everywhere, at work, and so on. And if we do that, open source, will be, in the end, will be everywhere because the civil society deploys it. So it's up to us. And it's good if politicians start talking about it, but they won't do that for us. I mean, we have to do it.
Yeah, okay. So, and also what I think is that what you see, nobody could have seen it because it's literally just out there, but that it seems to be a first step. So we see more recognition than ever before for open source. They mentioned some good example open source companies in this proposed law. They also see, of course, like Europe always do, that they need more research. Okay, you do more research. But... it seems that it's going in the right direction. So we are, I'm positive, so I always like to see the glass half full. Who sees the glass half empty here? Somebody wants to respond to it?
And I think that the principle of the debate is that people can join on the here on the scene as well. So if you wish to join, and also I think that if I say bullshit, for example, he can fire me. So maybe I will be fired soon. So I need someone to replace me here, please.
Or replace me. That might be a good idea as well. Now, anyone has got another view on what was just, as I just told you, I just gave you a first, very, very, very first brief view from my point of view, from what Hannah Vicarona said. But anyone else? Any really dissatisfied? Any happy with what was mentioned here? Yes. Gentleman over there. Yeah, you can take the microphone there, or you can come over here, whatever you prefer.
In fact, is it a real question? I mean, do you prefer open source code from Google US or proprietary code from Google France? Do you prefer code from Huawei China or from Huawei France? Do you prefer Kubernetes from Linux Foundation US or from Linux Foundation Europe? Yeah. So at the end, is it a real question? Has it any true meaning at the end?
And what do you think? Where are you?
I believe in communities and open source, and I don't think at the end it's a question of borders and nationalities. So we discuss a question of licenses. Okay, I get that. We have a technical question. Are you able to access the code or not? And what can you do? Did you have crypto restriction or not? Legal stuff restriction regarding something, but the question of the nationality of the code, if it's really easy to trick and to create a shell corp inside Europe just to get the money, I don't think that's the way to split, to have that question treated, because it will be easy to just to not comply and to create a fake company anywhere to just to comply with that regulation. I mean, just have a look at the current cloud regulation in Europe, and you will see there are not only true European contributor in concern. So,
yeah. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, so I'm an American living in Amsterdam. I was in San Francisco for 20 years, and I left when the entire city government was taken over by big tech billionaires. So my perspective on this is that, and as well as with the preparing for internet resiliency, what I care about is, does the open source software have people in physically located in Europe who are in favor of European independence and democracy and willing and able to work on this? One of the things I definitely notice is that it's extremely hard to stay in Europe if you have really good qualifications in technology. It's the market for that labor is global, and for various structural reasons, it's difficult for European companies to compete when hiring in Europe. So one of the things I see as important is changing the structural issues that make it difficult to retain the talent that can make the open source continue to work physically here in Europe.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And if you look at the EU Cloud Framework, we'll come to that. Thank you very much. If you look at the EU Cloud Framework, it's a very interesting topic, because if you look at the element of where the company resides, or to which laws they need to apply. So if you have, let's say, an American employee working here in the Netherlands, and they are then touching the machines of my customer, and we sell a service, we in this case is SUSE, but other companies do as well. If you want to have an EU sovereign support, you pay extra, because if you want to have 24-hour support, you understand that these people have to stay up during the night. Like we always had around the world service, you can't do that anymore. That means they have to stay awake. So it's a very expensive service now, but we offer that service. That means that we have to literally check which nationality does the person have that is picking up the phone or that's logging into your machine? It's a very good point. And actually, it's one of the gray areas in the current EU Cloud Framework. I can tell you, by the way, that there is a new Cloud Framework 2.0 version coming soon. Well, soon, European. So we don't know. But at least there is a heavy lobby going on to come with an updated and a more granular version of the current cloud framework, and that cloud framework will have a clear definition of exactly the point you mentioned. Thank you very much for that good point. There was another comment there.
So it's picking up on this, where do we write software? So I had a survey in the UK, and I'm still in Europe, not EU, but I'm still in Europe, remember that. And it said, was I using any software produced outside the UK? How do you define that? And I'm an open source developer. sitting on my laptop. So am I writing open source software in Paris today? Tonight I'll be home. I'm back in the UK. What does it mean? So I personally, I don't think it matters where the software resides, because we don't know most of the people. We don't know the existence or the identity of people. And I know the US tried that and said they didn't want any Russian or Chinese software in a particular domain. And somebody said, well, how do we try and do that without breaching all the personal data acts? Because GitHub, you know, Mickey Mouse 123, well, or call Vladimir Putin or whatever, no certainty they are who they claim to be. So we've got to really think about what it means. Is it the funding? Is it the employment? Is it the taxes? I don't know. It's a really important thing, but it's got to ensure that it doesn't inhibit innovation.
That's a very good point as well, absolutely. Somebody else wants to respond to this? Feel free to jump in at any time. No? Okay. Oh, over here, yes. I expect you came sit down here, that you must have some comments.
There is one person here, second, third, and fourth.
Oh, really? Okay.
And so five. Okay, wait, fourth.
And if somebody wants to sit here together with me and Pierre-Yves, then come.
Okay.
Yeah? Yeah. Take your own microphone and enjoy.
Okay, now I can speak when I want. Okay. That's why you have to come.
Oh, can I share my opinion? Okay. So for me, I would choose open source software from outside Europe than proprietary from Europe. Because first of all, I'm not European, I'm Tunisian, but I'm working within Orange Group. I'm collaborating with Europe, the European ecosystem. I believe that open source is a worldwide digital common. Also, we already recommended an open source ERP solution that is originally developed by an Indian community, but it's spreading all over the world, and there are also contributors outside Europe. So for me, the quality and compliance of the software is more important than the origins of its contributors.
Absolutely, and I think we are preaching here for this church, so I assume that 99% of us would agree with that. Is somebody disagreeing with the statement made over there? So if you look at this statement above here, we all prefer... No, you don't? Okay. The setting is we prefer open source software from outside the world, outside of the EU, because, well, open source is global, right? There is no border. And above proprietary from the EU. Somebody disagrees? So you... Yeah, but you disagree?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I think the question is a little bit too heavy. I mean, it's not about open source somewhere or proprietary somewhere else for me. That's why I created QSOS method. You have to look into the details, and it depends on your context. Like this woman from Tunisia, she says, my context is this one. I want compliance. I want that. I want that. For another context, it's sovereignty. I want it to be European based. For another context, it will be something else. What we need is some transparency and methodology to be able to analyze that. And then people, depending on their context, they will choose. To answer to the question from my side, if I can't say where is coming exactly the open source project, it's a good sign, because it means that it's coming from all over the place. But at the end of the day, as an architect, when I design a system, what I want to have and to design is a system that is resilient. And I can build a system that is not resilient with open source software, because it's vendor locked, because even if it's in Europe, and I can have a backup solution with an open core solution, for instance, but I have a way to, if necessary, to host the solution internally in case of change of politics or strategy of the vendor. So I think it's not open source there or there. It's a little bit more fine-grained.
Absolutely,
that's,
and I
that's
think
my vision.
Most people here agree, but I saw... You wanted to say that you would still go for the proprietary from EU, right?
He was asking for...
I love that. The group discussion and actually fighting over a microphone. That's good, really cool. Really cool. That's the way we want it, yes. Without the fighting element.
So my filter for this kind of question, first, if it's a fake question, I don't answer it. So if it's like provocation for it, I'll touch it. But that's just me. The way I filter this kind of things, though, in those difficult, both economical and, let's say, moral question is agency. How will it impact my agency and the agency of people around me? And if it's a dependency, basically, and it's potentially an adversarial dependency, so something I will depend on, but that by using it, I'm basically shooting myself in the foot, then it's not working. And very often, quote-unquote, just being an open source is not enough, because if it's an open source with governance I have no impact on, it's basically, yeah, I cannot use it. So, yeah, that's kind of my filter, my criteria for this kind of agency and more the global agency for people around me, including, of course, the political impact around it. Like, how will it, through the economical structure of the, let's say, corporation that will push for a big open source software, in a political context that is not mine because it changed, let's say, 2 years ago, for example, how will it impact me?
But then what you see is that apparently the lobbyists in Europe are, a lot stronger than the open source lobbyists are, apparently, because it seems now what I quickly saw from the brief overview is that being from Europe will give you a huge benefit. Having open source software is nice, but not a mandatory element. And we were hoping that it would give you a strong privilege in the purchasing processes. Yes. Pierre, if you wanted to jump
yes,
in.
Yes, if I just can add something, because, I like the idea of having sovereign companies from France, Germany, Europe at large. But what is a sovereign company? I mean, there are very powerful American funds that look at our startups, and as soon as they become successful, they just purchase them, so they stop immediately being sovereign. So I don't want that. Another thing I don't want is lock-in, because having a European company increasing their prices whenever they like, without any other choice for me than staying as a customer, because I can't escape, or who can even go bankrupt, or abandon the product or modify it in a way I don't like. I mean, that kind of lock-in is also an issue. And I'm not saying that open source makes sure. It's not a warranty. It can happen also with an open source project. There have been some examples. But it is a kind of insurance. With open source, it is possible to escape that issue, and it is not possible with proprietary code. So for me, open source is a kind of insurance first, and it's worth the risk to... We have to go this way because we can't be locked in, and we can bear the risk of having our startup purchased from abroad.
Okay. No. Okay. Fair enough. There were two more people who wanted to respond. Yeah, and a third as well. Excellent. Okay.
Great.
And after that, we will move to the next topic. So beware.
Great. So I think as technologists, we tend to think in technology terms, and the thing about a European company is that it is subject to European law. I hear you about I hear the point about vendor lock-in and raising prices. Also, it's actually possible to regulate companies based in Europe. Right now, it's still going on. It's not resolved, but a company, the Solvinity case in the Netherlands. There's a company that's critical to the process of doing anything with the government online. That was going to be sold to an American company that's currently been blocked, but maybe it'll, you know, blah, 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 ambassadors. But it is possible for the government to say, no, you can't sell. I want to use the specific example of SQLite, which is a very important, very good open source project, which famously fewer than 10 developers are allowed to contribute to and is extremely difficult to understand well enough to change. I would rather not depend on that versus something that can actually be regulated by European governments.
Yeah, good point. Thank you very much.
Second?
Yeah, thanks. I was a bit afraid that there might be a consensus among us. Mostly, I guess, that's, you know, open source is the base, right? Of course, it's better if it's open source. So I work at Orange Business, and for the past year, I've been talking a lot to salespeople. And so I'm not going to share what I think. I'm also an open source advocate, so I think open source is fantastic. But what I hear from salespeople, which is what customers want, what they hear, they want trusted software. They want sovereignty. We've been discussing that a lot this morning. And open source is one part of the solution. Barry, you said it. I mean, we all agree, but I'm afraid it's not a strong criteria. They want data stored within Europe. They want to have to make sure they can trust the software, but they can have support. It'd be more important to know where what company will have access to your data or to your software, who can log into your computers, who does the support, and so on. Open source is one key, but I'm afraid it might not be the most important.
Yeah, I think you're right. In our church here, we would say you cannot have digital sovereignty without open source. But there is a lot of, it's called FUD marketing, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. That's where it stands for. And that marketing is really pushing hard for what we call, as open source people, we call it sovereignty washing, right? That's basically what you mean, yeah. And it's very strong and very difficult to have strong arguments against that. But there are arguments. If you need arguments, there are plenty. But thanks for your comment. It's good to have that viewpoint. Last comment on this question.
I wanted to say that with the current definition, up until yesterday, you could work with Contentful, which was a Berlin-based startup. But from today, it got acquired by a US fund, so they can't work with them, which is good for us because we are an open source company based in Europe using open source product as a CMS. So I guess the debate is about legal control, really. At the end of the day, I think there is more to it in open source software, provided, you know, we exhibit with software, you know, what the users want, and they are desirable platforms that they want to acquire. And essentially, you can have like the best of the combination. So you have an EU entity creating like EU-based services with open source products. And then you have the, like from your slide this morning, you have the seal number 4. So you have the highest level of conformity with where the law is. At the end of the day, that's better for also like job security as well, I guess, within the union.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much for the. Oh, is there somebody who really wants? Yeah. Oh,
Laurent was waiting beginning. For a moment.
Yeah. No. Definitely, you were there from the beginning, asking.
I just wanted to say, I feel like we're having this conversation with like all these people listening because on the other side of the Atlantic, about a year ago, somebody came up and was like, "Oh, you thought we were friends? Now we're not anymore." But this matters because they have an enormous power over us, and I feel like framing the question as, oh, who is it, where are they, is a kind of like good guys, bad guys kind of binary decision, which does not really mean much. And I think thinking in terms of power relationships is more useful. Like when we choose a library, the example of like SQLite yesterday, this library has enormous power over, like, if I built my entire code over SQLite, they have enormous power over what I do, my service, my whatever. And if you're a government choosing a provider for whatever technical service, the same thing is true. Like, who do I want to give power to, but how much power am I willing to transfer to some external entity? And I suppose the logical conclusion of this would be open source, but also protocols and open standards more than open source. So maybe it's better to have a closed source thing that provides, I don't know, the telephone system is a good example. It's many of them are closed source, but they're all following a protocol. And if one of them is bad, it can change providers. So I think thinking of it in terms of reframing the question around power rather than who or where is probably more useful.
Yeah, I like that. I like that idea. And also, if you look at the power, it can also fluctuate at some point, right? We saw Hungary a couple of months ago when there was still a lot of, what would say, anti-European politics there. And was Hungary at that point one of our allies, or was he more on the other side? I don't have the answer, but now there was an election, and now suddenly it's 100% clear that he is on our side, or that the country is on our side. So it's also fluctuating. So you have to always be able to stand on your own feet. And I want to close here with one statement that I say, if you look at this discussion, we should see it as a dance and not as a fight. Because if you are dancing and you're on the floor and you're moving around, and it might happen that you bump into someone, and if you're really weak, then you will fall over and you are not able to continue dancing. But if you are able to stand on your own and have your own power, you will be able to continue dancing. And I think we as Europe, we should be able to have the dance and that we are able to stand our own feet. That's my opinion. And now we move to the next topic.
But it's just someone who wants to add something. After
I just wanted to say something very quickly.
Thank you.
And as others said before me, I think we have to learn to be happy with both of these solutions or hypotheses, because each of these hypotheses has advantage and disadvantages, mm-hmm. and on a legal point of view or on an operational point of view. And I think in France, it's absolutely normal that we have to promote our digital industry, creativity, and their patents. But we also have to be open, and we have to encourage open creativity. And I think international sharing creativity is a very, very intelligence sharing tool. And I think we all have advantages in this open source industry creativity.
Thank you very much. That's a nice closing comment. Thank you. All right. I would say we move to the next topic. And that's an interesting one, I think, because it's not so easy to answer. There's not really one really good, one really bad, not even if you're an open source lover. And that's about going big bang or go slow. What I mean with that, go big bang, we all know the fantastic example of Schleswig Holstein. That's right. It's a fantastic example at this point. But I want to put in a argument here why go slow might be good as well. Because this example, it's first now, it has a lot of flashlights, it's right in the spotlight. If this gets into the view of the third marketeers and this project in Schleswig-Holstein, for whatever reason, it doesn't matter what reason, goes wrong, at least wrong in the definition of the general viewpoint, then it might damage the complete open source industry. And I'm not saying that I'm for one or the other, but the Big Bang, it gives a lot of attention, and this attention might have some dangers. Going slow, so if you look at your complete IT infrastructure as a municipality and you just start with the low-hanging fruit, it takes a lot longer, and it will probably be more European project because it will take ages before you actually move maybe in that way you're able to move on a more, I would say, structured way. Who says, I want to go for Big Bang / Holstein method? You? Okay. Who else? Because there are pros and cons in both options. Do we have... No one else wants to go? Yeah, doubting. Me as well. I would not know if I would need to raise my hand or not.
I want to do a slow bang.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. All right. But you're very clear. You want to go for the Big Bang. Explain.
Well, I don't... Yeah, okay, sure. So the thing is that I don't think that Schleswig-Holstein is a Big Bang. They were preparing for it for years. I interviewed them, and I know that they've been working on the whole digitalization process and moving to Linux and everything like 3-5 years ago. It just was not available in the news, and it happened to be a Big Bang in the news because out of a sudden in January we were like, oh, what? They're moving to Linux, and they're already like 70-80% on Linux against Microsoft. So I think I would compare maybe a startup world in the US versus startup world in Europe. And I think there is more the legal framework, the way how you can build a startup, fuck it up, fail completely, and then start it over again, and 12 times like that. I think that's something that we are missing for the innovation in Europe, but I don't know what to do about it. I mean, I also don't think that we can change, you know, legal framework like that in one night, and maybe we don't even need to do that. So I think I would want to see Big Bang. That's my argument, because this is something that the US has succeeded in, doing those Big Bangs and iteration, and then out of a sudden, one of the projects out of 100 is going to work out. But we don't see that in Europe. And also, it's really sad when you see European startups, and then as soon as they're getting more successful, their CEOs and C-level people move to the U.S. for raising funds and like opening their headquarters there. It's sad to see for me. Yeah, so as I said, my wish would be to see more big banks than go slow, but I don't know if it's actually possible.
Well, I don't think it's black and white, but definitely arguments for this. Someone else has another argument regarding this. I see one, two hands. And before we go to the end, Pierre-Yves, where are you? Where are you on this matter?
I should say that, to my opinion, a revolution occurs when the means of propagation is there. It's not a question of spark. I mean, for example, if there is some gas in the air, there will be an explosion as soon as the concentration reaches a certain level. And someone somewhere will spark a flame or anything. I don't know. His phone will ring and everything will explode. So it's not, we don't need a kind of prophet, of game changer. We don't. It's not because we have a new brand ideas that things will change. Things will change because the old system will collapse, because its foundations have changed, and the means of propagation has become something else. So that's what we are establishing, because we have currently something like 80% of the code in the world, including the proprietary software, which is free software. So I think we are close to that level of concentration that triggers a revolution by itself. So we won't be able, I don't know if he or me or any one of you will be the one who will spark the flame, and maybe the history will keep his name somewhere as the person, the prophet who has triggered the revolution, but I don't care. And I concentrate on the means of propagation and not on who will be who will trigger the explosion.
There were some people wanted to comment. So, revolution...
Anthony.
Hello, yeah. So, it's revolution or evolution. Revolutions are really hard and disruptive, mm-hmm. and we've had them in history. Evolution means we are never standing still and we're continually being competitive. Where we fail is we fail to invest and evolve. We just rely... you take the easy approach, we'll just keep on buying the same software. And the UK's done exactly the same, I mean, I won't say how much UK has just spent with a rather large company beginning with M. And it was all in the press about, well, why didn't they go open source? And it came out, well, it was too hard. And the reason it's too hard is because it's become too ingrained and people are looking for the easy way out, not the pain. So we need to ensure that we never stop. Because go slow, the opposite of go slow is stop. We need to ensure we are always moving in the forward direction. And whether we move at the speed that the US does in the startup community and fail fast, or whether we move at the speed of nothing, it must be somewhere in between. So we need to accelerate and we need to be flexible. And when things around us are changing, we need to move on so we don't get left behind. So we need to ensure we are always investing, not just relying on every 5 years, okay, there's a change in politics, okay, then there's new investment. It needs to be a long-term, regular investment. Every year we're investing, choose a nice figure, and it's never challenged, rather than debate, challenge, etc.
So you say both, go big bang and slow.
I think it is. Don't go at what it's be flexible and change the pace according to the external community event, but never stop.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, because I have an example of a customer of mine in the Netherlands, and they went for the go slow and a little bit underneath the surface as much as they could, because politics sensitive. What happened is that proprietary supplier got to hear that the process was happening. So what did that supplier do? They went to the decision-making unit. I think they went to play a little bit of game of golf or so, and suddenly the contract was extended for another 5 years. So if you go slow, it can also have some dangers there for the open source salespeople. It's a good point. All right, yes.
Who was first?
Me, yeah. Same thing, both. It depends. I mean, Big Bang looks like it's creation from nothing, right? It's more business stuff, like, yes, let's go big and stuff. And sometimes, yeah, it's a good way if you're fighting in a specific arena and stuff. And going slow is more like you have something and you water it, you know, and you let nature, evolution, transformation, not revolution, as he just said, and as you said, I do agree with you. With time, people don't realize, but open source is going everywhere actually. So, just nurture it also. So it depends. Both are available, but it depends if you speak about business strategy or a more world domination secret plan, right?
Good point. So yeah, depends. That's the nice. You should be going politics. Who was next?
Yes. Me. So you'll get why I don't get invited to debates anymore. But just go. I mean, it's when I look at the stuff I've built in retrospect, and when I ask people to try and everything, I mean, I don't want to send myself flowers, but sometimes people say it's nice. When I do the thing, it is excruciatingly painful in so many ways, so very slow. But it's a little bit echoing what's been said before this. When you look at it and you look at it from the outside and you know how it's been built, it looks like a big bang. When you're in it day after day, wow. So my call for action is actually do the action, just go. Maybe it will be a big bang, maybe it will go slow, but what I really don't like, and it like makes me so tense or triggers me, is people that don't go because they're afraid that, oh yeah, maybe it's going to be big bang, it's going to revolutionize everything. Yeah, but you figure it out along the way. So I would say just go.
I would definitely invite you again for a discussion. I don't know why they should not invite you. Very good argument. Thanks. Yeah. A few more responses and move to the next, or do we want to stay on this one? It's up to you.
The first point may be that you have a choice, a radio choice? I mean, the Big Bang, it's... You suppose that you have enough time to prepare and to be ready. How do you plan for your disaster? So you can wait and go slow, but maybe you will have to do a big bang sooner than expected. Just think about a crazy guy, with a powerful crazy guy, and you may have to move very quickly and you need to be prepared. So maybe you don't have the choice to go slow. And on the other side, if you want to go slow and announce to the world that you are prepared to migrate, do you expect your enemy to wait and to help you during that process? Think about the Munich migration, for example. And so, if you are ready to the migration, and if you have determination, you are able to resist to somebody. You have a real choice, but I'm not sure that you have a true choice at the end, because you are always under the fire of different constraints. So that's a tricky question again, I think.
Exactly, that's why we put it up there. And you're right, we don't want Schleswig-Holstein to become the next Munich, right? Because the Munich example is at least experienced in the mind of many people as a negative one. Although I know people from Munich, and they were really touched and hit by the concept of open source thanks to this project, and they are still now heavily open source supporters. So even though these examples might turn out at the end as not worked well for open source, at least there were some very positive effects there. Anyone wants to comment on this one or move to the next? Ah, gentlemen.
I'm just assuming, you know, the question is going big from Oslo, from proprietary to open source. Correct? Okay. So I just would like maybe to take that in a different angle, because from my point of view, where we need to go big is clearly on open source mindset and open source culture globally, and from the early stage at school. Because we, especially for, you know, open source communities, project maintenance and so on, we clearly struggle with a lot of adopters who are shadow users, who are just using the product and don't contribute back. I'm in touch with a lot of big companies, a lot of OSPO, and they all struggle in order to change the mindset within their own organization to make it more efficient. So from my point of view, where we need to go big is changing the open source mindset and culture in order to make it happen and maybe more efficient. Slow, big, whatever you want at the end, yeah, based on your company, but do it well.
Yeah, good point. And also, like, sometimes we are forced to go big. Like, if you look at VMware, if you were a VMware customer and then it's bought by Broadcom and suddenly they showing you prices that are triple compared what you, or even 10 times, I saw quotes really going berserk. And then sometimes you just push to go big, at least in there, in that specific element in the stack, that you have to move away from VMware as quick as you can. But we saw a great presentation by Proxmox earlier, so there are possibilities to go out there. Anyone wants to comment on this one, or we'll move to the next? Yeah, we move to the next, I see. Okay, cool. Let's see what we have in more. All right. Hey, blockchain, what a surprise. This one came from a session earlier, and the question was if, well, maybe you can repeat the question, but I will try to repeat it. If it's not good, then please correct me. If you depend your data on blockchain technology, would that have a positive, a negative, or neutral effect on how sovereign you are as a organization, as a company? Is that the correct question?
So the question was a follow-up question of the first one. Would you, with having similar properties, choose a blockchain technology that has no control, nobody has control over it, or you would choose an open source, legit project that is coming from a non-EU state? If you can't choose an open source project from the EU, that's kind of like the question. So basically, you would rather have a project that has nice properties of open source and some other properties that you're looking for, but the control is under non-EU maintainer or company, or you would go for something that has no control whatsoever. The thing is that what I'm currently seeing is that blockchain as a protocol is really kind of like hard to define because of that specific property that it has Nobody has control over it. And that's, I think, that why people are scared of experimenting with the technology. Also, obviously, I'm not touching upon the negative media coverage where, most people think probably here that blockchain is a scam, which is partially true. Companies or projects that are being built on blockchain, on the technology on top of it, they have been about extracting the value. That's correct. But the technology itself can offer more than just moving financial flows from wallet A to wallet B. For example, I work for the Ethereum Foundation, and the Ethereum community has made a lot of contributions to zero knowledge technology, which is essentially the way how you can prove data without revealing information. And right now, for the digital wallet in the EU, they are considering one of the libraries that was not developed by the Ethereum Foundation, but by the Ethereum community, another product that they would potentially use this ZK library, zero knowledge library, for the digital wallet. Or, we have decentralized kind of like Dropbox, decentralized Google Docs, decentralized, I don't know what not, like really, you can build whatever on blockchain, but people are really scared of using it. And one of the examples that I can give here is that the European Central Bank is thinking about using blockchain technology for digital assets, but they're building their own blockchain because they can have control over it. They will never go for Ethereum or any other blockchain that already exists because it's public blockchain and it needs to, and they're scared of not having a control over it. So I don't know if there are people, I would love actually to hear, what do you think about blockchain? Just drop whatever, really. I'm very excited to hear more of your opinions, and or if you're scared of using blockchain, also tell me why. Or if you've been experimenting and you didn't like it, also why. I'm really all ears.
Thank you very much. Somebody wants to respond to our very enthusiastic. Hi, sir. Yeah,
I'm very enthusiastic in some way because I feel like it's so, how do you say, like polarizing, right? And I like it. Also, I don't... I hear my echo. So I don't understand all the maths behind it, but I feel like an application which I can imagine is when you want to share things, or when you want to communicate with a entity that you don't 100% trust, right? So then a blockchain can, like with zero knowledge proof, which we said is like a possibility to have an object that you can interact with, but you don't need to trust the other party. And I feel the same about the contracts, like these smart contracts that you can encode in a blockchain in order to be sure about actions of other people that you don't trust otherwise. I see the huge danger in the blockchain technology that is used for the wrong thing, because as soon as you can encode trust, and then you don't really need it in reality. I mean, this is not my logic, but it is possible with the technology to replace trust, and then the technology can replace actually existing trust in communities. And the same is happening with other technologies already, because some like extractive, you said the word extractive, like extractive industries have a big interest in reducing trust, right?
Okay, and final verdicts. Where do you stand?
I don't care.
You don't care, okay. Somebody does have a strong opinion? Okay, yes.
Sorry, and then I shut up. But yes.
No, we are in a discussion, so
what I like
up
about
is
blockchain
boring.
Is not the blockchain itself, it's the fact that it's a protocol and it's decentralized protocol. If you reframe it, how about relying on decentralized technology? I call it the internet. The internet was built because it was decentralized, right? And then commercial internet came and centralized everything. Now we all suffer about the golem that we fed with our own data because we didn't have the protocol to deal with the data, right? So what blockchain and that kind of technology, not blockchain itself, is trying to do is to create new protocol that we put on top of the internet protocol to deal with the value distribution on a decentralized network. So I do like this idea because that's the idea that allowed us collectively to build the internet. And that's maybe not, again, the blockchain itself, but the idea behind the blockchain, building new set of protocol, that's the future of the internet, because if not, it will become just two or three or four platforms. The new golem will be like OpenAI and stuff, siphoning and taking all the data from everybody. So we have to decentralize again. Yeah. That's wow. And open source was part of this movement, definitely.
Good point. Thank you very much. I'm looking at the organizer here. What are your time-wise? Because before they said 40 minutes, but it was one talk canceled. What do you want to do? Round it up or
I think
continue?
We have to cancel. Is it the end? Okay.
What was the verdict?
It's the end, I think. So.
Yeah?
Okay,
well, in that case, then I want to thank you all very, very much. Pierre-Yves, thank you very much for your view and for allowing me to manage this. I want to thank the organization of OW2. I want to have a super loud applause for everyone here who has helped to organize this great event. Please have a huge applause for everyone for OW2. Really a great event that you set here, and I'm looking forward to many more years. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.